transmitting live from the heart of Times Square on 99.5 FM WBAI New York, Pacifica Radio for the Tri-State Area. This is Trump Watch, a weekly series examining the changes made by President Donald J. Trump and his administration. I'm your host, Jesse Lent.
Through the public charge rule, President Trump's administration is reinforcing the ideals of self-sufficiency and personal responsibility, ensuring that immigrants are able to support themselves and become successful here in America. Our rule generally prevents aliens who are likely to become a public charge from coming to the United States or remaining here and getting a green card. Public charge is now defined in a way that ensures the law is meaningfully enforced and that those who are subject to it are self-sufficient. Under the rule, a public charge is now defined as an individual who receives one or more designated public benefits for more than 12 months in the aggregate within any 36-month period. For instance, receipt of two different benefits in 1 month counts as 2 months.
That was Acting Director of U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services, Ken Cuccinelli, briefing the press on over 800 pages of new rules on the way the Trump administration will be enforcing so-called public charge regulation, making it more difficult for immigrants who have used public benefits like food stamps or Medicaid to become U.S. citizens. Footage courtesy of the White House press office. Hello and welcome to Trump Watch. Do veterans of the U.S. Army or other military branches deserve a special path to citizenship? If recent policy decisions are any indication, it would appear that the Trump administration doesn't think they do. Tonight on the show, Yegena Torbati, one of three ProPublica reporters who uncovered emails from the Department of Veterans Affairs, or VA, showing the agency failed to secure the same protections for its members as were secured for active duty soldiers, will explain what her reporting tells us about the state of the VA today. Yegena and I spoke earlier today. Joining me now is Yegena Torbati, a reporter covering the U.S. government for ProPublica and co-author with Isaac Ardsdorf and Dara Lind of the August 19th exclusive report, No Comment. Emails show the VA took no action to spare veterans from a harsh Trump immigration policy. Hello, Yegena. Welcome to Trump Watch. Thanks so much for taking some time for us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Your findings for this article relate to a change in the way the so-called public charge regulation is enforced. What is public charge regulation, and how is the Trump administration changing it?
Right. So public charge is sort of an antiquated term that nevertheless has been a part of U.S. immigration law for over a century. And essentially what U.S. law states is that anyone who's deemed to be a public charge cannot transition to permanent immigrant status, so-called green cards. For most of that time, there was really no strict definition of what constituted a public charge. It was kind of up to individual immigration officers to interpret the statute. And so in 1999, the Clinton administration decided to try to actually define public charge, and they defined it pretty narrowly so that it would take quite a lot to be actually determined to be a public charge and therefore excluded from the United States. And what the Clinton administration said is that only someone who primarily depended on the U.S. government for subsistence, that is through cash welfare for most of their income, or needed U.S. government help to use long-term medical care, for instance, when Medicaid pays for your nursing home, for instance. Only those individuals could actually be deemed a public charge. And what that meant was that if you are an immigrant in the United States and you happen to fall on hard times, you have to use food stamps or housing benefits, that in and of itself would not disqualify you from immigrating to the United States eventually or transitioning from a temporary status to a permanent status. What the Trump administration has done now, and it's an effort that they've really been pursuing ever since President Trump came into office, is redefining public charge to mean to sort of lower the bar, meaning that it would now be much easier to be deemed a public charge by an immigration officer. And they've done this through a really complex new regulation that runs through to hundreds of pages and basically names all sorts of different factors that immigration officers can now and now must indeed consider in order to determine whether someone is too poor to immigrate to the United States.
Right. The new rules for the public charge regulation are 837 pages long. Does that excessive length tell us anything significant?
It's the length itself. I mean, there are many regulations that run to hundreds of pages. It is any sort of big, complicated change in how the U.S. applies a major law or is going to be impacting hundreds of thousands of people. We would expect that to be quite lengthy. And also part of what contributes to the length of this regulation is the fact that when the regulation was proposed last year, there was an unprecedented number of public comments in response, over 266,000. And that's one why it took so long for this regulation to be developed and to come out. And secondly, why it also runs to hundreds of pages.
How do you expect these new public charge rules to change U.S. immigration policy when they go into effect on October 13th?
It has been a major initiative of the Trump administration and particularly of senior White House policy advisor Stephen Miller. And it's a little bit hard to tell right now exactly what the full impact is going to be. We have a couple of indications. There have been a number of studies conducted by academics and also by immigrant advocates who say that this regulation will disproportionately affect immigrants, let's say, from Latin America, for instance. And also, we sort of have a little bit of a hint as to what's going to happen because the State Department, which, of course, also, in addition to its role as America's diplomatic agency, also serves an immigration function in granting visas to individuals. It has been implementing its own sort of stricter version of the public charge regulation for a little over a year now, actually. And some data that we have from that indicates that Mexican visa applicants were affected quite significantly, as well as Bangladeshi visa applicants. So individuals coming that maybe don't have a high level of education or don't have a high income, those are going to be some of the countries that at least experts and some indications that we've seen already would point to those groups being affected the most and no longer being able to immigrate or being able to immigrate in much lower numbers.
In your ProPublica article, you reveal that veterans will not be protected from this shift in immigration policy in the same way that active duty military personnel will be. How did that happen?
So what we found was that throughout 2018, when the White House was developing this regulation in conjunction with the Department of Homeland Security, they actually went to many different federal agencies, 19 by my count, and asked them for their comments. The Department of Agriculture was included because they oversee a federal benefit program, the food stamp program, that is highly implicated in this regulation. The Department of Housing and Urban Development was included because obviously they oversee housing vouchers and those are also implicated. But also, institutions and agencies like the Department of Defense and the Department of Veterans Affairs were also included and they were asked for their views. Now, what we know is that when it was given the chance three times throughout 2018 to comment on the regulation, to submit any sort of concerns or argue for exemptions for veterans, instead the Department of Veterans Affairs each time just submitted a simple one-line, no-comment response. And that differs from the Pentagon's response, which we know about not because we've seen emails between the Pentagon and the White House or the Pentagon and DHS, but rather because the Department of Homeland Security itself has said that it carved out an exemption to the public charge policy for active duty military and their families in consultation with the Department of Defense. And they say that, you know, the Pentagon expressed these concerns to us. They were worried about active duty military having to worry about their immigration status or their family members' immigration status and how that might affect troop readiness. And therefore, we agreed and we've carved out this narrow exemption to the public charge policy for active duty. But that simply doesn't apply to veterans. And in our story, we posit that that is because the VA did not sort of take up the same kind of advocacy that the Pentagon chose to.
You report that the White House began seeking those agency comments to 19 different agencies, as you just mentioned, about this new interpretation of the public charge regulation on March 29th, 2018, one day after President Trump had fired his Secretary of Veterans Affairs, David Shulkin, and that's when they received that first no-comment response. Do you have a sense of whether the failure of VA officials to secure this exemption for their members was an oversight or a choice?
So this is something that I can really only speculate on, but I do think that that timing is important. That that's an important context to remember when thinking about this story. You know, the emails that we received were between an official in the Office of the Secretary and the White House. And so if you're an official in that office receiving that email a day after your boss has been fired, I think it's safe to presume that there are a lot of other things going on. There's a lot of chaos and confusion. And that's one factor to remember when looking at, okay, how did the VA actually then respond to this? And certainly critics of the VA and the way the VA acted in this case say that it seems to them that there just wasn't given enough research and attention to how this very complex, very important regulation would affect the VA's own constituents, that is, veterans.
You note in your article that veterans will now face the same scrutiny to get a green card as someone who has never served. Green cards for American citizens who don't know this process, that's sort of, I guess, fair to say, the first step in becoming a citizen. So what will that process now look like for them, these veterans who are now receiving no exemption from this new policy?
So a couple things. One is that we don't know this exact number, but it's probably actually a pretty low number of veterans who themselves don't have green cards. There are obviously many non-citizens who serve in the U.S. military, and that's long been the case. But usually by the time someone actually leaves military service, they've received some sort of permanent status if they were a non-citizen or holding a temporary visa when they first entered. The larger population of people that will likely be affected by this are actually the family members of veterans. So if an American service member is married to an undocumented person or a person on a student visa, and let's say that family is using public benefits, and then that spouse goes to apply for a green card, this is where the specific fact that they don't have this exemption is really going to affect them. And so what this means is that if you're in the active duty, you are still subject to the public charge regulation. You still have to prove that you're not going to be a so-called public charge as the Trump administration has defined it. But the only difference is that if you use public benefits heavily, in the 3 years prior, in the time period prior to applying for that green card, then it's not going to count against you if you are active duty or if you are the spouse or child of an active duty service member. And veterans just don't have that exemption. So their use of public benefits is going to count against them.
I'm speaking with ProPublica reporter Yegna Torbati. You're listening to Trump Watch. My name is Jesse Lent. Yegna, is there any practical reason why the higher-ups at the VA wouldn't want to protect their non-citizen members from this new immigration policy? Is there anything they stand to gain?
I don't know that I would be able to speculate on that. I did not uncover anything suggesting any sort of practical reason in my own reporting. I can tell you sort of what the Department of Homeland Security said as its own justification for why it didn't grant the same exemption to veterans.
Please.
So, and it's important to note that the DHS only offered this explanation when members of the public asked, why are you granting this exemption to active duty military and not to veterans? That is, it's important to note that because that's the first time that DHS had to answer for that because the VA did not seemingly pose that same question to them. So what DHS said in its in sort of its discussion material or its response to these public comments in the text that it released last week was that, well, there's a few things. Military members are subject to a subject to low pay, effectively. That's a part of what Congress has mandated as the military pay scale. Secondly, that veterans have access to veterans benefits and they don't have to abide by the same. They're free to take higher paying jobs once they've left the military. And so those were sort of the two main reasons that DHS gave for not granting the same exemption. Of course, the critics and veterans advocates would argue that veterans benefits, A, are not open to every single veteran, and B, are not a substitute for kind of the broader social safety net that is provided by food stamps or housing assistance, Medicaid, things like that. And also that, yes, veterans are certainly freer to take higher paying jobs and they're not bound by the military pay structure, but that still many veterans struggle. And, you know, as we can see, given the fact that there are many homeless veterans, there's no guarantee that they'd be able to transition. And so veterans do often need to use public benefits in order to avoid falling into poverty.
Can you discuss the methods you used to break this story and if the Freedom of Information Act you filed for it has led you and your team to any other promising leads?
Sure. So as you mentioned, this story came about as a result of the Freedom of Information Act request that I filed. I filed these requests with many different government agencies because I had heard and then sort of knew through my reporting that as part of the regulatory process, the administration had involved many different government agencies in giving their comments. And so I was curious to find out what those government agencies had said about the public charge rule internally, and that's how I came across these emails, which we received, last week or now last week. And I think so. In examining the fine print on the regulation, in order to understand what was happening for this story, it sort of led us to a second story, which we published yesterday. In which we basically found what looks to be an apparent mistake in the text of the regulation. And we wrote about that, talked to a lot of experts about what it meant and how it might have come about. And the general consensus was that this was a result of sloppy drafting and was an indication of kind of what happens when you sort of rush out a regulation and have a lot of pressure from the White House to get an important regulation out the door.
Ken Cuccinelli, the acting director of U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services, who announced this new expansion of the public charge regulation we've been talking about, landed in a bit of hot water around that same time for telling a Morning Edition reporter, he said, "Give me your tired and your poor who can stand on their own two feet and will not become a public charge." This is obviously very different from the sentiment on the Statue of Liberty. Do you have any feelings about that particular row? And if it's just a distraction from what is, from everything you've been saying, a very significant policy shift in immigration, or is it a way of broadening this discussion?
I'm no literary critic, so I don't know if I can sort of criticize Mr. Cuccinelli's interpretation of that poem.
And to be clear, the statue says, mm-hmm. "Give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free," the famous Emma Lazarus, mm-hmm. Lazarus poem.
Exactly. I've been covering this public charge issue now for about a year and a half, since February 2018 was when I wrote my first story on this regulation being drafted. I've never seen as much public attention on it as I have in this past week or two. By my last count, there's 5 lawsuits being pursued against these changes by the administration. I think what people are interpreting as Mr. Cuccinelli's view of that poem and view of immigration to the United States in general, I think critics would say that the administration ignores the fact that there have been economic analyses showing that immigrants and their children, so sort of the total lifespan of an immigrant coming to the United States, raising children here, and then looking at the economic contributions of the family as a whole, that on net immigrants contribute financially to the United States, and they're not a drain on public resources. Obviously, the administration would marshal arguments and facts in contravention of that, but I think some of the criticism that you saw of Ken Cuccinelli's interpretation of the history of U.S. immigration is due to people feeling that they are ignoring the benefits that immigrants bring to the United States.
And he made an odd distinction with CNN's Erin Burnett, where he said, well, when she mentioned that her own family was poor when they came to the country, he said, well, back in those times, it was mostly people coming from Europe, as if that somehow was different in terms of immigration policy. Did you see that clip as well?
Yeah, and they had in Europe, they had like a caste. And he went on to say, like, you know, they had a caste system in Europe or something like, or a class-based system in Europe. Then in response to his comments mentioning Europe, that a lot of people responded by noting that Lazarus's poem talks about how, it quotes a worldwide welcome, meaning immigrants from all over and not just necessarily white immigrants from Europe.
Looking at the more big picture ramifications of your report, what do you think it tells us about the way the VA is being run during Donald Trump's presidency?
I think that, you know, this story is maybe a small example, but nonetheless, a crucial one, an interesting one of sort of what happens, what are some of the concrete consequences of chaos and turmoil within the different agencies and sort of a vacuum of leadership. I have not done extensive reporting on the VA. Certainly my colleague Isaac Arnsdorf has contributed a lot to our understanding of how that agency has been run under the Trump administration. But certainly looking at the timing of the removal of the VA secretary, former Secretary Shulkin, as well as when the agency was asked to weigh in on this really complex process. Like, these are the sorts of questions, controversial questions, where having leadership, Senate confirmed and stable leadership in place, can help those agencies when it comes to, whether it's arguing or interacting with, the White House and the Department of Homeland Security. These are not easy questions. These are all very high profile, very controversial, policies that have really powerful advocates, within the White House. Some would say the president himself, but certainly his senior policy advisor, Stephen Miller. And it takes really empowered career and political officials who can engage on these questions substantively and try to hash out the best policy for their constituents and the people that they're supposed to represent. And I think this looking at kind of how the VA approached this versus the Pentagon shows you some of the consequences of that.
Finally, in the last 60 seconds we have here, do you have any thoughts on what President Trump is hoping to achieve with this new interpretation of the public charge regulation? Is it as simple as once again showing his base that he's being tough on immigration?
I think that is part of it. Certainly, immigration was a big issue in 2016, and there's no indication that that's going to change for 2020. If anything, it's going to be even more front and center. And being able to go out and say that, you know, we've stopped immigrants from using public benefits, even though that may be a very broad and kind of crude generalization of what this regulation actually does. But if you can sort of imagine it at a Trump rally, that may be one interpretation of it. And that certainly would appeal to his base and his political constituents. You know, the Trump administration has endorsed legislation in the past that would cut legal immigration to the United States by an estimated 50%. There are some immigrant advocates and analysts who believe that this regulation on its own would do that as well. And so you could see how these changes also accord with some of their views more generally of how the immigration system should change. President Trump has said that he wants more legal immigration to the United States. He only wants to cut down on illegal immigration. To be totally frank, that is a stance that I have not seen backed up in the immigration policies that his administration has pursued. And certainly public charge is an example of that.
Thank you so much.
Thanks so much for having me.
I've been speaking to Yagana Terbatti, a reporter covering the U.S. government for ProPublica and co-author of the article No Comment, Emails Show the VA Took No Action to Spare Veterans from a Harsh Trump Immigration Policy. You're listening to Trump Watch. My name is Jesse Lent. That's all for this week. Reggie Johnson engineered this program live. You can hear all 125 episodes of Trump Watch with Jesse Lent at soundcloud.com/TrumpWatchWBAI or wherever you get your podcasts. Join us again next week when we'll break down a different aspect of the Donald Trump administration. Until then, I'm your host, Jesse Lent. Talk to you next time.